Golf Smarter number 73 from May 8, 2007.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Doug Hodge, head golf professional for Greyhawk Golf Course.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome, and thanks for joining us for the Golf Smarter podcast. On today's program, Kenny Nicholson of Edwin Watts Golf will review the new Titleist 907 D1 and the 907 D2 drivers, and we'll have an announcement that I think will please all the Kenny Nicholson fans. Today's guest is Doug Hodge, head golf professional at the Greyhawk Golf Course in Scottsdale, Arizona. Greyhawk has two courses, and we actually toured the last three holes of the Raptor course in a golf cart while recording the interview. So if you have Google Earth feature plugged in, please make sure you check out the three holes as we discuss them. If you're not familiar with what I'm talking about, Golf Smarter may be the only podcast that is interactive with Google Earth. This allows us to discuss the course while you're able to get a close-up view of the hole and look down the fairway on your computer as we discuss it. To find out how to use the function, please go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the words Google Earth. And all the instructions are right there for you. There's also a complete tutorial you can download to walk you through the process. Golf Smarter is brought to you in part by the Bird Golf Academy. Please contact Jay Ewing at Bird Golf Academy to find out why the Bird Golf Academy is best suited for your game, your method of learning, and style of play. Click on the Bird Golf Academy link at golfsmarterpodcast.com and don't forget to ask for a 10% discount because you listen to Golf Smarter. Welcome, Doug.
Well, thank you for having me. Looking forward to giving a little tour of the property here.
This is a very exciting thing because I've never taken my recording equipment out on the golf course, but here we are at Greyhawk.
Greyhawk Golf Club, Scottsdale, Arizona. Yeah.
And it's a beautiful morning. I when I opened the door to the clubhouse immediately, I was like, oh my, this is breathtaking. And that was just the clubhouse. And now we're just coming outside the...
This is the patio of Quill Creek Cafe Restaurant. We've got two full-service restaurants, Phil's Grill and Quill Creek Cafe. Obviously, in about 2 hours or so, it'll probably be 150 people on the patio having lunch this time of year. Obviously, it'll be 85 today.
Oh,
and perfect.
That's
and
perfect.
The patio is really popular. And you got an unobstructed view of the 18th hole and the McDowell Mountains.
Okay, well, and this is a golf course that you guys are very lucky because this is going to be on the PGA Tour at the end of this year, correct?
It will be, yeah. The second week of October, the 15th through the 21st, we're hosting the Fry's Electronic Open at Greyhawk Golf Club, a full field, 132-player tour event.
And if I understand correctly, on television.
On television, yeah.
First time event, and you guys are going to put it on TV right off the bat.
Yeah, 4 days on the Golf Channel.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And so I would guess that this is going to be the premium seat right here at the clubhouse looking over the water at the 18th green.
This is. All the logistics aren't done yet. There's going to be some sky boxes on the 10th. Tea area. And
I love the hospitality.
Yep, and a little patio area down here by the lake, which will probably be the best view.
Now,
of the
is that driving
green.
Your maintenance people absolutely crazy?
You know, we're actually...
They've got to be freaking out. What do you mean grandstands on the 18th?
Yep, we're talking about actually building a new tee on the 10th hole so we can use the very back tee box on the 10th tee for sky boxes there. So,
no, wait. We're recording this in April of 2007.
Yep.
You said the event is in October,
uh-huh.
And you're going to build a new tee in that amount of time?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it takes a couple weeks to build it, and during the summertime, the Bermuda grass will grow in.
Oh,
no problem.
And you're not going to have a whole lot of traffic when it's 110 degrees.
It's
outside.
A little bit slower during the summertime.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Okay. All right, well, let's go take a tour.
Perfect.
Tell me about yourself. How long have you been here?
Sure. I'm actually coming up on my 9th year. In May at Greyhawk Golf Club. I've been the head pro here for a little over 3 years now.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
Where did you come from?
I came from Michigan, just outside of Detroit, about an hour. And Went to Ferris State.
Oh, go ahead, crush the bunny. This could be. Oh, wow.
You know, gotta watch out.
It's
for
a
bunnies.
Good thing this is not a video podcast because that was just gruesome.
Yeah.
You are vicious.
Vicious. Grew up in Michigan. Went to Ferris State University in Big Rapids.
I couldn't wait to get to Arizona.
Couldn't wait to get out of Michigan. Absolutely. But yeah, you know, coming to Arizona for quite a few people. Once you get here, it's really hard to leave.
Yeah.
And I fell into that category.
Except when it's August, and as we said, the weather gets a little bit...
You know, you really get used to it.
Well, yeah, if you came from Michigan and you're in a place where there's no humidity, it's like, it's not that bad.
It's not... Well, yeah. I mean, it's obviously 115 is 115, a dry heat or not, but, you know, it's not too bad.
Okay, we're either in the largest sand trap I've ever seen in my life, or we're out in the desert.
We are. We're taking a little shortcut to get us to the 16th hole.
Okay.
Get a little back lot tour here.
What does it mean to a golf course to be on the PGA Tour, logistically speaking? I mean, I know status-wise, ooh, that's really great, but logistically, on the day-to-day,
sure.
What does that entail?
You know, it's a great promotional piece for us, obviously, and to be on TV is great, but, you know, the actual operations of the event, we've had some televised golf events, the Tommy Bahama Challenge, the Williams World Challenge, Anderson Consulting World Championships of Golf, which is now Accenture World Match Play. But we've never had a 132 players out. You know, logistically, it'll be interesting to go through the day-to-day of that. You know, we're lucky TPC is so close to us, we're able to utilize some of their parking, and you know, there's a lot of infrastructure for having a few thousand people out here. We aren't going to have, you know, the 125,000 people like TPC Scottsdale does for
what do
the
you
FBR
expect
Open.
As far as crowd,
you know, we're shooting. We'd be happy, and we're planning on keeping it around 5,000 people a
day.
Are
you selling tickets, or is it just a free-for-all?
Yeah, we're going to sell tickets.
Okay.
You know, we're going to do a lot of corporate activity around the clubhouse and ticket packages with that, and there'll be some general admission tickets available.
Oh, my gosh, is this beautiful.
Yeah, this is the 16th hole, my favorite hole on the golf course here, and really kind of the guts of the home stretch of the Raptor course starts here. We'll go back to the back tee, but...
Well, let me ask you this. Was Greyhawk developed as a course to be on tour? You know, was when they built this course, did they say, we want to create a course that the PGA needs to be attending?
Not at all. Nope. We built a... I mean, Greg Trias and Del Cochran, when they built the golf course here, they built it for a place, you know, modeled after what they wanted to do as a golfer when they go on golf trips.
Okay.
They want to have great golf, great atmosphere, cold beer, and good food when they're there. So that's, you know, as simple as that is, that's kind of how they modeled the golf course. And, you know, they didn't design it to be, you know, a stadium style golf course like a TPC course would be. That's, you know, they're designed to host 100,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're designed to host 200, you know, golfers in a day to come out and play golf.
And have the absolute best experience as possible.
That's our goal. And it's a bonus that we're able to host a tour event, you know, for Fry's and for the PGA Tour.
And part of that experience, obviously, is the clubhouse and the restaurants.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, if someone came and, you know, played their 18 holes of golf and then left, you know, they get a great golf experience, but probably not the full experience. You
guys would be very disappointed.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the restaurants are excellent. And, you know, the golf is, you know, it's obviously a large portion of the experience, but, you know, the golf shop, you know, there's a great retail experience in there outside of just golf apparel. And the food and beverage is great.
All right, we're sitting at the tee box of number 16, right?
Yeah.
All right.
16th
hole. Why don't you give me a tour?
Let's
boy, I wish I can show a photograph of this.
Yeah.
Usually when I talk to people about their courses and they tell me how beautiful, I'm sitting here staring at it. This is really a magnificent shot.
It's fun, you know, to actually get out here and look at it. This is my favorite hole, actually, out of all 36, the 16th hole. from the back tees. Raptor course, yep. Tough pin location today, back left. And for those listening that have played here, there's a pond on the left side with a creek going up the hill.
And that pond is very much in play.
Very much in play. It's 213 to the center of the green. To that pin, it probably plays close to 230.
Uh-huh.
Little downhill. A lot of room to the right. Sitting back here on the tee box, doesn't look like there's any room to the right, but there's a little bit of bailout over there, which leads to a fairly difficult chip shot to
and
the hole.
Now, behind the hole, there's a hill coming down towards the green. Will that be used for seating?
Yep, there'll be spectators back there.
You don't expect to go long here. I mean, you're not going to go long here.
No. You know, that's probably, other than being in the water, that's probably the toughest up and down, especially to a back hole location.
Yeah. Is that a Sunday hole location?
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, if I was setting it up, that's where I'd put it on Sunday.
Okay.
For sure. And the greens will probably, you know, they'll probably be rolling 10 and a half, 11, 11 and a half.
And you're talking about the speed on the stimp meter.
Yeah, on the stimp meter for the event that year.
And what do you have it generally during the year?
You know, we try our best to keep it at around 10, just because the greens are undulating.
We really are outside. That's the one of the maintenance mowers going by us.
Yeah, we mow everything before play pretty much every day.
Wow.
So there's a lot of maintenance out now.
You're playing from the back here.
Yep.
Go ahead and give me shot by shot. Give me a tee tour of this place.
Sure. You know, from center of the tee box here to that hole location, plays 225 probably. And most likely I'd probably hit a 4-iron because it is downhill. Greens are fairly firm. And I'd probably be aiming, you know, center of the green. And if I could hit it pin high with a 4-iron on the green, I'd be really happy.
And if I can ask you of a player of my caliber, I'm not hitting from back here.
Sure.
So really the goal here, get the ball on the green.
Absolutely.
And then work from there.
You know, on the Raptor course, we've got three sets of, I guess you'd call them men's tees and a ladies' tee, the Heather tee. We've got the Raptor tee box that plays 7250. Hmm. The Palo Verde tee, the green tee box there, plays about 6,600, and then the Terracotta tee marker plays 6,300 yards, give or take a little bit. So, you know, when you come out here, finding the right tee box to play is really the number one thing, because it's a really hard golf course, and if you play from, you know, the back tee boxes.
Now let's talk about really hard for a second. You keep talking about yardage, but let's not focus on the yardage. Let's talk about the slope here for a second. Your front tee boxes.
Yep.
And I'm the front for the men, we'll call them.
Yep.
But the front tee boxes, what's your slope on
this? Slope rating from the front, I believe, is 127.
Yow.
Yeah.
That's very difficult.
133 from the Palo Verdes, and I think we're in the 144 area from the
Highest you can get is 155.
I believe so, yeah.
This is a difficult golf course.
It is.
This is really going to challenge the tour.
Yep. You know, I was talking to Aaron Oberholzer last week. He was out practicing a little bit, and he was saying that it's not going to be overseeded like it is right now coming out of summer. The condition will be unbelievable as a Bermuda-based golf course. And he was saying he's thinking 15, 16 under will probably be the number.
Let me ask you a question about that. Is that good for golf? When you have 4-day score of 15, 20 under, is that good for golf versus a Masters that plays at a +2 or even par over 4 days?
You know,
come on, be controversial. It's a podcast. Nobody's listening.
For us, honestly, I'd love it if somebody shot 20 under out here, because there's a lot of people that come out and, you know, think that the golf course is too hard for them to come out when they're, you know, you come out from Minnesota in March, you haven't played golf.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you're going to get, you know, you're going to, it's going to be a difficult day of golf for you. You see, you know, those guys come and shoot 16, 20 under, gives you a little idea of what the golf course, how it plays, you know. if those guys shoot 20 under, gives you a little idea that it's not quite as difficult as you would imagine.
Should we?
I think we're all set. Thanks. Yeah.
Should we be playing the same rules as the pros do? Do you think the USGA is setting up rules as far as, like, in the equipment for distance and on balls and equipment?
Uh-huh.
The rules that the PGA Tour players have and what the rest of us have, should they be the same? Should we be following their rules? 'Cause
I think so. Yeah. I mean, the only reason why I would say no would be the golf courses that those guys play, mm-hmm. especially like U.S. Opens. It's a shame that, you know, a course like Marion, which I guess is going to have a U.S. Open or a PGA Championship or something like that coming up, you know, that's 6,800 yards is obsolete, you know. But, you know, you look at Jack Nicklaus 30 years ago, he hit the ball a really long ways playing those golf courses.
Playing with that equipment.
With that equipment, you know, so... You know, you can't, you know, throw equipment totally under the bus on that topic,
But we're not talking about steroids in baseball here.
No.
We're talking about making it a level playing field.
Yeah.
Everybody has the same equipment to work with.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I'm just wondering, is it really good for golf if everything stays status? Isn't there more interest in phenomenal play?
Absolutely. I'd rather see, you know, Tiger Woods hit it the way Tiger Woods hits it, then Tiger Woods hit it, you know, with the same golf swing, hit it 40 yards shorter.
Right. But you still want to see him hit it off to the right and out into the woods or into the desert. And
yeah.
You don't have woods here, but yeah. Hit it out into the desert. And yeah. It's like, oh, you want to see their frustration too.
But I'd like to see Tiger Woods play the same course that Ben Hogan played, you know, yeah. Which isn't going to happen a whole lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can argue it either way, but you know, the equipment companies want to get, you know, the technology out there for the average handicapper.
But the USGA is saying,
yeah. You got to pull it in a little bit. But, you know, everything seems to be maxed out to the USGA maximums right now. So
I question, what's the point? Why even have those maximums out there?
I mean... It's not going to affect, you know, it's not going to affect my level of play or your level of play.
Not at all.
You know?
But if it's more alluring for me
mm-hmm.
and for you, I mean, you say you come out here and you're going to hit a 4-iron. For me, it's like I might be able to reach it with my driver.
Yeah. You know, we were talking the other night.
I'm not going to hit the ball 400 yards, no matter what they do
yeah,
to clubs.
We were talking at a staff meeting the other night. Some of the guys that have been here for a few years, you know, the progression and equipment change. And, you know, the different clubs that you hit into different holes. You know, when you play the same golf course for a long time, you know, you don't really think about it until you start talking. You know, back in when you were using a TaylorMade burner driver or a, you know, Pittsburgh Persimmon driver. You know, because when I started here, I remember I had a Pittsburgh Persimmon driver. And, you know, on the Talon course, hitting 4-irons and 3-irons into, and now you hit 8 and 9 irons into those holes. It's the equipment and the golf ball especially seems to be that much better.
Yep. That's the point.
It's better.
Let's move on.
Okay.
Are we finished with this hole? I mean, everyone's got a great view of this. Well,
absolutely.
We're hoping they have a great view of this hole.
Let's go down to
it's so beautiful.
We'll go to 17.
Okay. Now, the two courses that you have here, Raptor
and the Talon course.
And the Talon course.
Yep.
Very different courses?
I think so. You know, they're both desert-style golf courses.
Sure.
And the major difference between the two, the Raptor course, off the tee box, it's longer, you know, a couple hundred yards longer on each tee box. The fairways are wider on the Raptor course. You don't really find a whole lot of trouble off the tee box. But the second shots into the greens... are a lot more difficult, really deep bunkers on the Raptor course. And the greens, you know, have a lot of undulation from front to back and from side to side. So it makes it pretty tough around the greens. That's really where it gets more difficult.
Yeah, I'm surprised that wider fairways would be something that you would select for the PGA Tour course.
Well, yeah.
But you're also saying longer,
Yeah.
You know, more difficult greens.
Mm-hmm. It's not like it's completely wide open.
How much discussion was there? It's like, which course do we use? Which course do we use? Or was it just a hands down? Let's, you know,
well,
slam dunk.
You know, it's kind of a hands down decision solely because of the facility on this side of the street. You know, golf course is, you know, I wouldn't say it's better than the Talon Golf Course by any stretch. And, you know, talking to people that play both of them and have been out for years and years and, you know, talking to them at the golf shop, it's about 50-50.
Okay.
Some like Talon better, some like Raptor. But we've got the clubhouse right here. We're lucky enough to have two ranges, practice facilities. So, you know, with the clubhouse, it just makes sense to have it here on this side. But golf course-wise, you know, the Talon course, while it might play a shot or two easier, it would be just as good of a venue for an event, in my opinion. And, you know, we've had the Anderson Consulting World Championship for 3 years on there back in the mid-90s when we first opened up for 3 years. So this is the green complex. Like I said, there's lots of room on the right side
from
there for
from
a bailout.
Standing behind the green now versus when we were just up at the tee box,
yep.
A very different view. You can see the approach they have, and this is a great view for a fan.
Absolutely.
To be looking at the ball coming towards them, but there's a lot more room than it seems like from that angle.
Exactly, yeah. Behind the 16th green, you know, I would post up right there and watch them come through.
Yeah.
Absolutely, that'd
be
a good spot.
Great picnic spot.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And we're in a high point here in the desert. It looks like you're looking out towards are those the Superstition Mountains?
Well, you've got Camelback down there
okay.
in the valley. And when we get to 18T, it's really the best view that we have on property. So we'll talk about that there because you get the view of the clubhouse and the whole valley, actually, all of Scottsdale and Phoenix you can see from there.
Wow.
It's a good spot. We're about 1,700 feet above sea level at our highest point. So...
And do you have a lot of holes where you're hitting up or down?
You know, not a whole lot.
Desert golf is usually fairly flat.
It's pretty flat, yeah. I mean, you know, compared to, you know, if you went up to in Sedona, you know, in the mountains there, you're going to get a lot of elevation change. Not so much in town here in the valley.
Okay, we're pulling up to the 17th tee box.
Yep, 464 from the back tees.
Bagger pass,
yep.
Par 4.
Uphill. Plays more uphill than it really looks like from right here. I think it's a half a club, maybe even a full club, difference on the second shot.
And I don't see that from where we are right here
mm-hmm.
next to the tee box. Should I be looking down the fairway down here?
Yep.
Straight ahead.
Straight ahead.
But I don't see the green from here, correct?
Yep, you can see you know, the second bunker. The green is just beyond that.
Oh, I see.
Yep,
okay.
It doglegs left just a little bit.
Okay, I'm looking the wrong direction. Okay, so that guy is working over there
mm-hmm.
by the green. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, the guy in the white shirt's
mm-hmm.
pretty much at the landing area. Then it doglegs left just a little bit.
Okay, but the green that I'm looking at on the left there.
Yep, that's the 17th green.
Oh, so it. Okay, great.
Yep, just a little bit. They don't have the flag in
so
there.
So you've
as
got
yet.
You've got some desert and a couple bunkers
uh-huh.
on the left side of the fairway here.
Yep, first bunker doesn't come into play.
Okay.
Second bunker, you know, it's quite a ways to the left, and you know, it's there more as a deterrent from people hitting towards the 18th fairway.
So you've got a lot of room on the right side there.
Yeah.
Is this a driver hole for the tour?
Definitely. Those guys will definitely they'll definitely hit driver on this hole.
Okay.
Really depending, you know, October, it'll still be pretty warm, which makes a big difference out here. You know, the
ball
flight
flies.
Of the ball. The ball goes a long ways during the warm summer months. But I would imagine the majority will hit driver here.
Yeah.
Because it's wide. It's pretty wide off the tee box.
Right. Right. And then they're just going to be taking a short iron to the green from there? Or?
Yeah. I would imagine, you know, probably 6 irons at the most. And no bunkers around this green, which is not typical for the Raptor course.
Right.
Well,
so I mentioned the first couple bunkers there on the left side of the fairway. The
yep.
first one you said doesn't come into play. But looking up towards the green, you don't have a whole lot of trouble.
not a whole lot of trouble.
Although the green looks elevated.
Visual, not a lot of visual trouble from your second shot.
Mm-hmm.
There is a big swale in the middle of the green. Two distinct tiers on this.
Okay. The large green.
Yep. Left side is falls off severely, and it's closely mown. So, you know, you hit a little short and left, it'll kick off, and you'll have
and
a
roll forever.
25-foot chip shot. You know, if you short side yourself.
And these greens are going to be fast.
They'll be fast and firm, yeah. So
you really have to touch.
One of the tougher greens to really hit, in my opinion, you know, the lower tiered green, that portion is probably the easiest hole location. Back left is really tough, especially if you mishit your drive a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, and you're looking at a 5-iron in there. It can definitely be a challenge.
What is the most common mistake that you see the amateurs make coming out and playing this course?
You know, I think they get a little concerned about the desert and hitting it in the desert. It's like when you stand there and there's water down the right side, you know, a higher handicapper focuses on the water mm-hmm, and not mm-hmm. on where they need to hit the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with the desert. The bad thing is you've got desert left and right long on every hole. So when you come out and play the desert, there's a lot more grass. Even if you can't see it, you know, there's a lot of room out there. I mean, we've got 90 acres of turf on here, which is it's a lot of grass. So, you know, when you come out, especially for your first time to the desert, you know, don't focus on it and focus on the grass and you'll be fine because there's a lot of room. You know, and I would say that of the majority of the golf courses out here. There's a lot more grass than
so now we're talking about the mental
people.
Part.
The mental part, yeah.
We're talking about the mental mistakes that are made out
absolutely.
Here. And that's what really can hurt your score more
absolutely.
Than anything is worrying about what could happen as opposed to focusing on what you're supposed to be doing.
Absolutely. And then, you know, strategy-wise, especially on a golf course like this with really severe greens, don't short side yourself. You know, give yourself as much green to work with as you can. You know, if you're going to miss a shot, miss it so you have as much room as possible to chip to.
You don't really need to go after the pin on your approach shots.
No. I mean, no.
I guess I made the point. No. Big lizard.
Yeah, it's big.
That was a big lizard. And then, I mean, I'm talking about just go for the center, get yourself on the green.
Absolutely.
And get it to hold.
Absolutely. Right. That's the number one challenge.
You know what? Let's take a little walk
sure.
outside the cart.
Yep.
And we're pulling up to the 18th tee box here.
Yeah. Which will be played as normally it's a par 5. They're going to play it as a par 4 for the event. So we'll be playing from the second tee box
up. So this
up.
Is normally a par 5.
Normally a par 5. Yep.
But you guys are going to knock a stroke off.
Yes.
And that's because they can definitely get there in
yeah,
two.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to play the 7th hole as a par 4 also. So
okay,
it'll play
so,
as a par 70.
So then we're going back to a set of rules for the pros and a set of rules for the rest of us.
I guess so.
So that
yep.
can be done.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. And because I can see that you have, for the normal player now,
yep.
there's a lot of trouble here.
Absolutely. This is a great finishing hole.
This is beautiful.
As a par 5.
Man, oh, man.
You know, pretty decent size landing area. That bunker on the left side of the fairway, mm-hmm. most people can't reach it.
But that's your target.
As long as they're playing from the right tee box, yep. You know, I can get it to the front portion of that bunker.
From the back tees.
From the back tees.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I guess it's designed to get you in that front part. The thing, that bunker is 30 yards long.
Wow.
At least. And it looks pretty short.
That's a 3-shot bunker right there.
Yeah. It doesn't look that big from right here, but it's very long. And there's a ton of room to the right. We got a little outcropping of desert there and trees. There's grass over there.
Is the bunker before the water? Or is it they
it's
pretty
before
much start
the water.
Around the same?
Before the water.
Okay.
Which standing here, it looks like the water is probably right. 260.
Yeah.
But it's probably 340 to get to the water.
Oh, okay. Let it rip.
So, yeah, you can't reach the water.
And then on the other side of the bunker, how much approach room do you have to the green?
There's quite a bit.
This
you
is
know,
par 5.
Yeah, the edge of that bunker, the very furthest point of that bunker is probably 180 yards to the center of the green.
Uh-huh.
So there's quite a bit of room to lay up to. It all slopes towards the water, which makes it a fairly difficult layup. If you're on the left side and you hit a cut that's running and a little hot, that's the number one challenge, is not hitting it, you know, having it run down into the water. Depending, you know, where you're trying to lay up to. But it's pretty reachable. You know, you hit a good tee shot, you'll have three, four, five iron in. And I would imagine the guys on tour, they'll have, you know, playing it from the second tee box up, plays about 505. They'll probably, you know, have eight irons, seven irons in.
I'll be bringing out a three wood.
Yeah.
Living out here in the valley, there's a lot of professional athletes that live out
there
here.
There are, yeah.
You must have a lot coming through this course on a regular basis.
We do, yeah. You know, we've got
not just professional golfers either.
Sure, yeah. You know, during spring training, obviously the Cactus League's out here. So those guys come out. You know, Eric Gagne has a house here. He plays out quite a bit.
You seem amused. You're thinking about this. There's a story that's going through your head.
No, not about Eric Gagne. No, I don't.
But I mean, there must be an athlete or two that you've just you laugh out here.
Well, we do a lot of...
Come on, share a story.
We do a lot of celebrity yams and, you know, pro scratches during the wintertime. You know, we've got an event called the Tommy Bahama Desert Marlin that's out. And I was just... Mark Mulder plays with Pat Perez in that event. And
I'm an Oakland A's fan, and I remember when Mark Mulder came up and he pitched there for a while. They talked about that Mulder was probably the best golfer in Major League Baseball.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, this guy
I would have thought
obsessed.
Maddux. Greg Maddux. Yeah. I don't know. I've seen Mulder hit it. I'd probably go with Maddux. No.
Oh, really?
No, Mulder's, you know,
he was a rookie, too.
Yeah.
But
I'm sure his game is
he's got
is
game.
Good.
He definitely. Yeah,
absolutely. So,
have you ever seen Mark McGwire play?
I haven't.
Because he used to be a big
I've seen
golfer.
Him on TV before.
Yeah, he's a big golfer, except he seems to have gone into hiding the last couple of years ever since his appearance in Congress.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, there's a lot of athletes that are out here.
And you probably get some PGA players
we do.
Coming through here on a regular
We do.
Basis.
You know, Peter Costas teaches out here.
Right. You have a great school out
we've
here,
We've got
too,
a
right?
tremendous school, yeah. And... over the last couple of years, we've added Stan Utley into the fold. He teaches out here. His short game school is based here. So he brings a lot of high-profile tour of players out here.
Fabulous.
You know, Corey Pavin was out last week. And,
oh, wow.
He works with a lot of those guys. So, you know, it's cool as a golfer out here playing golf, you know, after your round, you're eating lunch in Phil's Grill, and, you know, those guys are in there having lunch just like everybody else. So a lot of people get pretty excited about that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Okay, so as a golfer, what's the best advice you've ever received?
Best advice I've ever received about managing my game?
You can take that wherever you'd like.
Sure. Probably the best practice advice I've ever gotten was from Paul Trittler, the director of instruction here. You know, as a golf pro, you'd think we play golf and work on our game all the time.
And we hate you for it. I just want you to know that.
Yeah, not necessarily the truth. You know, during the wintertime here, I don't hit balls or play golf hardly at all.
Now I hate you.
Yeah.
Why not?
Well, just, you know, it's the business here at a high-end daily fee is that it's business.
Yeah. No, I mean, I was watching with a friend of mine. We were watching, and Mickelson came on and goes, "God, I wish I could have his swing."
Yeah.
And I said, "God, I wish I can play as much as he does."
Yeah, exactly.
I'll get his swing if that happens, if you can play that often.
Exactly.
But I'm sorry. Go ahead. We're talking about advice.
The best practice advice, you know, I was hitting balls, you know, during the wintertime. I had an hour or whatever, and I was hitting balls, and I'm hitting five irons. And, you know, Paul helps me out with my swing occasionally, and he was driving by, and he's like, "What are you hitting five irons for right now?" He's like, "If you go out and play, you know, without playing a whole lot of golf, you need to work on hitting your driver, and then from 140 yards in is where you need to focus your time. Because if you can hit your driver well, you know, most golf courses, you're going to be able to get it within 150 yards, you know, depending where you're playing, and that's where you need to keep your game the sharpest. You know, the 6, 7, 5, 4, 3 irons, you know, as you play golf, and you know, you run into those shots, your golf swing will be able to compensate for the lack of practice in that area. But when you get to a scoring distance, you know, 130 yards, that's the area that you should do your best to keep your game sharp all the time. So, you know, when I go out and practice now, I hit a lot of sand wedges, a lot of pitching wedges, a lot of nine irons, you know, drivers, and then I go putt.
It's fabulous advice.
That's the best advice. I don't even worry about hitting five irons. You know, I let that practice come into play when I, you know, you get out and actually play golf. And I always try and be target specific when I practice. I go through my routine on every shot. That's probably the best advice. You can go out and hit 300 balls and not aim at anything and think you're making improvements, but how do you know? You know, when you go out on the golf course, try and make that same swing and it's going in the wrong direction. That's because when you were practicing, you weren't aiming at anything. So, you know, you see it every day when you drive down to the practice tee here. You know, guys trying to hit as many balls as they can and not thinking about what they're doing. You know, just trying to get it airborne and moving in the right direction, which is, you know, the number one challenge for the majority of golfers out there. But practice with an idea of what you want to get accomplished, I guess.
Practice with a purpose.
Exactly. Yep.
Doug Hodge is the head pro of the Greyhawk Golf Course, and Golf Magazine has labeled it one of the top 100 courses you can play in the United States, and we have definitely seen why. Doug, thanks so much for your time. This was really fascinating, and I loved the tee tour here.
Absolutely. Thanks. It was fun.
Golf Smarter now presents Nick's Picks with Kenny Nicholson, sales manager for EdwinWattsGolf.com. Kenny keeps us up to date with reviews of new products and new product development. Nick's Picks is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968.
Kenny Nicholson, how are you?
I'm good, Fred. How are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. I'm excited because even though we're not going to ask any questions today, and I'm sorry, we have been getting a lot of questions for you, I would like for you to review some equipment, which we haven't had a chance to do in a while. What do you got in your bag?
Well, this past weekend, I had the opportunity to go out and finally hit the Titleist 907 D1 and D2 drivers, which are phenomenal, I might add.
Really?
Yeah, it's been hard to get our hands on those for demo purposes. They've been selling so well, so they've been apprehensive to letting us go out there and try some of them. But I finally had the opportunity to go out there, and while I was there, I let some other guys hit it at the range. To get their feedback and their response. You know, some of the guys were not very good golfers, and a couple of them were real good. So, you know, it's just good to get out there and hit the products and try to give you an idea of how they perform for, you know, just about every skill level out there.
And what did you find out?
Well, I found out the Titleist D1 driver, which is the one that's going to be sold to the masses, I think. It's more of the triangular-shaped geometry. It has an increased moment of inertia, which we talk about a lot on the show. What the moment of inertia is, it's the resistance of twisting on off-center hits, which, I mean, I got to tell you, if you put tape on a driver, impact tape, what we call, to tell where you're hitting the ball on the face every time, you'll see, I mean, typically you're not going to hit the ball in the sweet spot or the center of the club face the majority of the time. You're just not going to do that. So any driver that has a higher moment of inertia is going to help keep the ball in the center of the fairway. The club's not going to twist as much, basically. So the D1, it was the first driver I hit. Hey, to me, it's the grip it and rip it club. I mean, you can just go after it as much as you want. The ball stays fairly straight the majority of the time, unless you just, you know, one of those you know, over the top or just real outside in. But for the most part, I found that you can just take it and swing as hard as you want to, and the ball is going to go pretty straight. Another guy had just bought an FTI driver, and he, I mean, he was taken out of the wrapper and everything. Bought it at Watts, which is great as well. But, you know, I said, hey, hit that a couple of times, and then I want you to hit this driver a couple of times. And to be honest with you, I mean, I shoot you straight every time. It would have been a coin toss. For the guy, because he hit his, and then he hit the Titleist. He goes, man, I don't know if I bought the wrong one. And he went back and hit his Callaway. He said, no, I did fine. Everything's fine. But from a look standpoint, some of the ones out there that have the higher moment of inertia are a very square-looking driver. Titleist is more of a triangular shape, so it doesn't have that real square look to it. So for some, it might be a little more appealing at a dress. But for the most part, both drivers played really well. Me, I'm more of a traditionalist. I like a little more of a traditional style golf club. So the D1 does offer a little bit more of a traditional look.
Yeah, wait a minute. When you say a traditional style, you're just talking about the physical look of it.
Yeah, I'm just, traditional drivers, we say, it has that pear-shaped look to it.
Right.
And that's, a lot of people, it's hard to get accustomed to a driver that has a different geometry to it. For some, it can be.
Well, come on, but we had to adjust going from a wood to these metal clubs, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, the biggest adjustment at one time was when Callaway came out with the biggest Big Bertha. It was like a 300cc driver.
Right.
It was like,
right.
Oh my gosh, I cannot believe this thing is this big. How are you going to hit it? It reminded me as a kid, playing wiffle ball, baseball, for those of you that don't know. But they had those, remember the big fat bat?
I love those.
Yeah, it kind of brought me back to that. And I was like, man, it's unbelievable. How can you miss with this thing? And now we're talking about 460cc drivers. You put a biggest Big Bertha up next to them, you think you're hitting a fairway wood now. So
exactly. Well, it's so funny because for how long that you and I have been talking and you've been telling me that my Callaway Hawkeye Big Bertha is like, Fred, you've really got to, get with the times. And that was a radical driver, and it's when it was new, I just held on to it longer than most people because I was hitting it well. But you did get me out of it, and
I got you into a Cleveland Highbore XL.
Yes, you did, and I am now a convert to the MOI.
Yeah.
I am hitting the ball very straight when I'm hitting it well, which is more times than not. I mean, the ball is incredible. Doesn't matter where it hits the club face, and I'm hitting it straight. But I'm also noticing that I'm hitting it a lot farther, too.
Yeah, people ask that question a lot to you and to me as well on the telephone. And, we're not trying to just sell somebody a product when we talk to them. A lot of times we're just talking to somebody, giving them advice. They want to know what technology has changed and how is it going to help their game. And, those are the questions that we get a lot of the time. And you're a perfect example of a guy that played an older driver and, has technology passed you by? If you're playing one of those, absolutely it has. Not just with, moment of inertia, but also with coefficient of restitution, the spring-like effect on the golf club. So, yes, you can hit the ball a lot farther than you used to, and, yes, you can keep it in play a lot more. So there's just a ton of drivers out there. And if you are a better player and like to work the ball, the Titleist 907 D2 is that traditional pear-shaped driver. It does have what's called an increased moment of inertia, it being pear-shaped. It doesn't have as high a moment of inertia as the D1, but then again, it does have a higher MOI than their older drivers. But if you do like to work the ball, what I mean by that is be able to hit it right to left or left to right on demand or hit it fairly straight, and you're a better ball striker and hit the ball in the center of the club face most of the time, then the D1 driver is definitely phenomenal. For me, it was the better choice for me. One, it had that traditional look that I like, and two, I like to work the ball just a little bit. So, I found that the driver was phenomenal, especially compared to the old. I played the Titleist driver in the past, the 975J, just a huge difference in the two drivers with spin, trajectory. We talk about launch angle and spin rates, so you're able to hit the ball a little bit higher with less spin, so you're going to get more carry and more roll. Just a great, phenomenal golf club.
And how did it sound? That's always important to the recording
always,
engineer
sounds always,
here.
Yeah, sounds always a question. And I will say this, with the triangular effect on the D1, it has what I call a traditional sound from a titanium wood. It's not extremely loud. It is louder than the D2 because of the shape, but it's not as loud as some of the other higher MOI drivers that are out there. Sound is a huge aspect for some people. They're like, oh, man, it's just real, real, real loud. But, it's like going from wooden bats to aluminum bats.
Well, the time that you and I got to play together, we were graced with the new Nike driver, the Sumo Sasquatch, right?
Right.
And we weren't thrilled with the sound of it.
Well, it's just real loud.
It's just different.
Yeah, for some people, though, they're like, when they hit it, they're like, man, I crushed it. Did you hear that? That's what some people want to hear. Sound translates to distance.
Right.
Well, not always. Mm-hmm. So sound something that they work on and make a huge effort in trying to make a sound that's appealing to everybody out there. And they've done it with these. You know, the D1 is definitely louder than their older drivers or the newer D2s. So, but that just has to do with shape.
And what about price point on these clubs?
Price point, you're looking at $399.99 from a retail standpoint. So,
it's comparable to all the other.
It's comparable to all the others out there. I mean, if you put a plethora of drivers out there that have the MOI to them, the majority of them are going to be in the $399 to $450 range. So, it's really find out which one you hit the best and purchase that one.
So, Kenny, should we share our secret?
I think it's a good time to share it.
I think because of what you've been talking about, I think it's a real good time to share this. If you like this kind of conversation that Kenny and I are having and talking about the new equipment that is coming out and how Kenny reviews it, we'd like to tell you about a new podcast that's being released by the time you hear this. And if it isn't, check tomorrow, but it will be here. And it's called Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf. And we are going to be providing, Kenny and I together, we'll be out there talking to the leaders of the industry, and we'll only be talking about technology and equipment, correct?
That is correct.
And our first program is about the new geometry in driver design and MOI. And our guests on the show, we have three very impressive guests. We are going to have the Vice President of Research and Development for Titleist, Scott Burnett, and he's talking about the 907 D1. And actually, here's a little bit of what he had to say.
You know, I think that we're going to continue to see, more and more attempts at even ability to fit players. I think that's really ultimately what a lot of this thing, spins toward, because, there's a technology side of this, but there's also a side of it of trying to get equipment to individual players which can maximize their performance. And I think you're going to see more and more products and things being done to try to get to the individual player and actually fit them. It's still more important that the players actually fit to their equipment than even a lot of these high technology things. And I think companies are going to really strive to try to provide more fitting opportunities.
That's Jeff Burnett, Vice President of Research and Development at Titleist. Also on the show, Tom Stites, Chief Club Designer for Nike, and Jeff Colton, Senior Vice President of Research and Development for Callaway. So that's Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf. And you can either go to edwinwattsgolf.com, and you should see the Golf Better logo right there on the front page. Click on that, and it'll send you to the page. Now, here's the other exciting news about this new podcast we're going to be doing. We're going to have a sweepstakes on the first show, and you're going to get a chance to win the driver of your choice. So we'll continue to be giving away stuff here at Golf Smarter, but at Golf Better on our first episode, we're going to be giving you the choice of a driver if you are the winner. So make sure that you go to edwinwattsgolf.com and click on the Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf podcast logo. Very exciting. It should be in iTunes very soon as well.
Yeah, through all the enthusiasm that we got through your show that we did with you, Fred, we decided, hey, these people are very enthusiastic about technology and what's out there. And we talked to some of the industry leaders, and they were just as excited as we were and said, hey, if we can get some of the biggest names in golf, the behind-the-scenes people, the guys that make the golf clubs that are out there, not just for the average consumer, but also for the tour players. And we're talking about, the best players in the world. These are the guys that do it. These are the guys that are excited about it. And these are the ones that design these golf clubs from the very beginning. So they're going to have, a lot of insightful information for everyone out there, as well as for us. I mean, we're excited about it to be able to, basically like a roundtable discussion with these guys is very exciting for us, and I know it'd be exciting for you as well.
A lot of it is because of the great response that we've had to the Ask Kenny and to the Nick's Picks segment that we're doing here on the Golf Smarter podcast, and people want to know more about the equipment. And what I'm really happy to say about working with you guys is that
this is not going to be a show where we're selling you more stuff. That's not what it's about. It's about education so that you can understand how to be a smarter consumer when it's time to go out and spend your money on golf gear. We want you to know as much as you possibly can so you make the right choice for you.
Exactly. I mean, that's what this show is all about. Helping you become a better shopper.
Absolutely. And our second show, which we are working on the details and we can't give you the names yet, but it is going to be a roundtable discussion with Kenny and myself and a couple of other people that you will recognize their names if they say yes, which they already have. It's just the timing of getting everyone on the phone at the same time. And we're going to talk about putters. So the first show will be about drivers and the new technology, and then we're going to go right back to new technology, and we'll talk about putters. So we're very excited about the Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf Podcast. But let me make something really clear for you. We've decided for this show, we're only going to do 12 episodes this golf season. We want to provide the best conversations with the best information. So don't look for this show as frequently as Golf Smarter. Please stay with us, Golf Smarter, every week. Listen to Kenny Nicholson every week to do reviews and answer your questions. But every month, we're going to do one or two episodes of the Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf Podcast. So there, that's our secret. But now that you're here at the Golf Smarter Podcast, we still have stuff to give away, right?
Absolutely, we do.
We're always going to give stuff away. The Nike Extreme Cart Bag we're giving away. Please, to enter, go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the contest button and fill out the form, and you will be entered. Deadline for entries is midnight, May 21st, and the winner will be announced on the program on May 22nd, 2007. And if you'd also just like to send an email to me with your entry, make sure you put Nike Cart Bag in the subject and send it to pickme@golfsmarterpodcast.com. So, Kenny, that's it. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, Fred. Thank you.
So many of you have asked for a long time, and now you have more golf shows to listen to, Golf Smarter and Golf Better. As always, I'd love your feedback, and if you can provide an honest review at iTunes of the Golf Better or any of the podcasts from smarterpodcasts.com, it's always appreciated. I know this doesn't mean a lot to you, but I thought I'd mention it anyway. This last week, Golf Smarter celebrated 500,000 total downloads since we published our first episode. I bring it up only so that I can say thanks for the support. And remember, if you have a question for Kenny, just go to the golfsmarterpodcast.com website and click on the Ask Kenny button. While you're entering our new contest, you'll see a complete list of all the great prizes provided by Edwin Watts Golf and who won each time. While you're there, please check out the rest of the new website, smarterpodcasts.com. Remember, it's plural, podcasts. And at the end of today's show, I'll play you a promo for Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf Podcast. If you're from Cincinnati, Ohio, I got your interest already, and your name is Jason Nichols. Whoa, don't roll it off the road now. Pay attention. Oh, my God, he's saying my name. Jason, could you please email me at fred@golfsmarterpodcast.com? The last time you entered the contest, you didn't provide your email address, and I just want to make sure that we can communicate with you. So, Jason, please include your mailing address so that I know I've got the right guy. This week's closing quote comes from Matt Gentry of Livonia, Michigan, who says that one of his favorite quotes is simple. Amateurs work until they get it right. Professionals work until they get it wrong. If you have any questions, comments, quotes, or requests, just click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarterpodcast.com. If you've ever been in the market for new golf equipment, your first stop should be the Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf Podcast. We're not going to give you our opinions on which club is better. We're going to talk to influential industry professionals on why a club is better. Our premier episode addresses the newest design and driver technology. Here's Jeff Colton, Senior Vice President of Research and Development for Callaway.
We shoved about 10 designers and engineers into a room and locked the door and said, walk out of here with the best performing, straightest driver you can think of. They came up with the square shape.
Tom Stites is the Chief Club Designer for Nike.
Just making the club larger made it easier to play and more friendly to hit. And so, lo and behold, the golfers started having more fun.
And Scott Burnett is the Senior Vice President of R&D for Titleist.
I think you're going to see more and more attempts at even ability to fit players. It's still more important that the players actually fit to their equipment.
And representing the consumer is Kenny Nicholson, Technical Specialist of Edwin Watts Golf.
We require these manufacturers to come in here and speak intelligently about the product.
I'm your host, Fred Green, inviting you to subscribe to the Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf podcast at iTunes or at golfbetterpodcast.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.